Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello and welcome to the bullpen. I know what you're thinking. Where's Tom? Tom is at the Dynamo game tonight, and so he will not be here. Potentially other people, I have feelers out to show up, but it was very last minute that I thought of it. Tom did give me a lot of notice, so that's kind of on me. But we're here. We're here live to talk about the Texans in the very middle of the offseason. Not too much going on, but hey, let's break the ice with this one. J.J. Watt had another kid, and guess what day Nico was born? June 14th of this year. Now, June 14th, that's a pretty important day. It's Flag Day. It's my birthday. So I feel like Nico Watt is destined for greatness. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and list him as 1 minute. Let me count out the years. It'd be, he'd probably come out of college a little early, so we'll go with 21. So, you know, the 2046 draft, I think he's first overall. So don't quote me on that, but do quote me on that maybe. I don't know. But Instagram chat's pretty live. Training camp's going to be lit. Yeah, I agree. Space City jerseys, are the Astros wearing them right now? I've been following the game on my phone. I hadn't had a chance to tune in. If you're talking about, so that's we'll start with that. There's not a lot to talk about, but the Rivals jerseys, I've seen a lot of talk about what those could potentially be. Ruben and Harley have been pushing the discussion around maybe a purple look. The Dynamo had purple jerseys at one point. It's not something that a lot of Houston teams have played on, but that, you know, the Screwtown culture kind of thing going on, DJ Screw kind of stuff. Is something that could definitely be played on with slap culture and stuff. Before that, I mean, and I know we've seen other teams do Space City jerseys like the Astros have and the Rockets, but I would personally like to see maybe something that is plays on Space City for the, you know, for the Texans, as much as they are not a space theme named team. I mean, looking back at the poll for the names for the Texans initially, you know, with the Apollos being one of the names, that was one that I really liked. And I've said it before, I really like the name the Texans, but like, if you were asking me which name I would have picked, I probably would have voted for Apollos back then. So, you know, I love space, the JFK Center, one of my favorite things that is in Houston. I just love, you know, like during the tour, when they say, you know, you're the first and last word said in space, like, Houston with the Eagle has landed. All that stuff, super, like, super big to me. So seeing them go the space route with the rivalry jersey would be great. But I don't know how much it'll be about the city, or rather the rivalry aspect of things. In which case, I mean, I don't know what they would play on between Jacksonville, Indy, Nashville, and Houston. You know, but yeah, there you go. With the negativity. No, I'm just kidding, Brandon. Welcome to the chat. I was waiting for you to show up. The division rivals would have called us the Apollos. I mean, who cares what they would call us? I think it'd still be a cool name. That maybe that's just me. So I will sit here alone on that hill and die on it. But yeah, so with the rivalry uniforms, I'm really interested to see what they do, if it's focused on the city, but I don't really know. And I don't even know if any of those have been revealed yet. I know there's a couple that are supposed to come out this season. The Texans don't get theirs till next season. But I'm interested to see what route they take with the other ones. I think the Chargers are one where they're going to probably do like the navy blue for the 60th time in that team's history. So I'm curious to see what they could do with that. But let's talk. And by the way, it's a live episode. You guys are in the chat. If you have any questions or anything you want to talk about, please feel free to drop it. I'm here solo, and y'all's questions will make this a lot easier than if you didn't ask questions. So thank you. With training camp coming up, and I'll preface this by saying this. If we talked about it before, it's because the Texans offseason can be boiled down to is the O-line, is the offense, is CJ Stroud, you could name a number of things, they're all on the offensive side of the ball, going to put it together and make this Texans team the great team that it could be. Because simply put, if the Texans continue to have a top five defense, and on top of that, add even a serviceable, but let's say a top 10 offense, based off how good they've made the position groups outside of the offensive line through the draft and free agency and trades. This is a team that will be in Super Bowl contention, but the big question mark is the offense. So that's really what is going to be talked about, because that's, you could ask some questions like, how is Christian Harris going to show up in training camp and show that he still has value to this team and not let the nickname Harris County go to waste? How does Damon Arnett, fit? And is this going to be a Texans team that only relies on the top end of their defense until injuries happen? Or is the depth going to be expected to step up significantly this season? Because it felt like outside of the line that the Texans pretty much played a select group of players on defense and didn't really rely on depth in the way that we thought they would. So didn't really play as heavy a factor until injuries occurred. But looking at training camp, obviously, we're going to talk about the offensive line. The subject of the offensive line is something that has been talked about a lot. And I'm excited for training camp because it's really the earliest point that we can look at this Texans offensive line and go, okay, did Nick cook or did he not? Nick, I need to find a picture of Nick Kasiri looking at the camera and be like, chat, did we cook? But that's really the big question is, because I've spoken to it before. I'll explain my thought process here again. The Texans likely determined that the offensive line was a schematic problem, and it was caused by a dysfunction between Bobby Slowick and Chris Strausser, both of whom are gone. And just firing those two and keeping most of the offensive staff outside of that is to me reflective of that. And so if you believe that coaching was the issue, you still approach the problems that could potentially exist, be it Laramie Tunsil maybe not being the best fit as a leader of that group. Maybe there's a talent deficiency in that group, so you move on from guys like Shaq Mason and Kenyon Green. But then you approach it the same way. Like, so on the exterior, they haven't quite gone out and done the same thing in terms of signing big names like the Texans have with the edges on the defensive line. But I'd say interior wise, they're kind of mirroring, what they did with the interior defensive line, which is, hey, everyone wants us to go out and pay $17 trillion for an all-star at this position. We're going to go and just, grab guys that had high potential that you were probably begging the Texans to draft 4 years ago that are on the last year of their contracts. And we're going to say, hey, earn it. Here's your chance. And with that, the decision to, the observation that if the Texans did in fact believe that the offensive line was a schematic issue, when you view it that way, you free yourself to go, okay, well, if it wasn't a talent issue, sure, we can add more guys, shuffle it around, get some guys to enter that swarm mentality. Like I said, to address, maybe Laramie Tunsil's effect on the vibes in that room and his leadership due to it being because he was skilled and not because he was necessarily called to leadership. Sometimes leadership chooses you and you probably weren't the best one to be chosen for it. You get some guys that are good culture fits, Yeah, guys like Jake Andrews at center, who has shown to be, I'd say, their viewed starter at this point. I'd say it's a competition, but he's definitely throughout most of camp and at mini camp and OTAs been very clearly the guy they view as their number one center. A guy who worked with Cole Popovich out at Troy, Was drafted to the Patriots. Has familiarity with the coaching. Is probably the guy that they wanted, in a prime example of a guy they brought in because of, you know, culture fit and vibes. And you do that. You bring in those guys, high potential. Kind of like the Texans did with cornerback last year with Okuda and Henderson, and like they did this year with Arnett, former first and second round picks who have high potential, that need a chance to prove it so that they can either prove that they're worth rostering next year, or, you know, if they really want to get the bag, they could prove that they're really good at the position. So in my prime or ideal situation here is that a guy like Ed Ingram or Laken Tomlinson earns a starting spot on the Texans offensive line, and everyone's like, boo, this guy sucked. You know, right after Kenyon Green was traded, they're like, wow, we added the two guys that were worse than him in run and pass blocking PFF grades in the whole NFL, and we put them on the roster instead. And you look at that and you go, okay, well, they downgraded, but it's like the ideal situation is one of those guys steps up and plays the season of a lifetime, just is PFF's darling. Every week PFF is posting about how great their PFF grade is. And, you know, occasionally ESPN or some grifter, some, you know, aggregator on social media, or maybe even the Texans team account itself will say, like, it's been 13 weeks and we haven't seen Laken Tomlinson allow a sack, you know, like that kind of thing. And then if that's ideally how it goes, then you probably are outpriced of him and he signs with a different team for big money. But, you know, in Laken Tomlinson's case, it could be that he's, you know, he's past that point where he gets that big money contract. He's been in the league for, like, I want to say 10 years at this point. You maybe get him for a good deal because he likes the culture. Kind of a similar thing to what the Rockets did with Fred VanVleet recently. You know, you get a guy who was on, granted, he's not on the same deal that VanVleet was before he took a less pay, but you get a guy who raises his value significantly and then takes a pay cut relative to the value he added to himself to stay on the team because he likes it so much. That would be great. But ideally, those guys perform way out of what anyone expected of them. And then if they leave, they leave. You just keep signing guys like that. You keep going out and spending your sixth and seventh round picks on, you know, to prevent guys from hitting waivers that are, like, you know, projects that went to LSU and were second round picks in their respective drafts, but just never really panned out. I'm looking at you, Ed Ingram, who the Texans traded for right after getting rid of Kenyon Green. And you build an offensive line with those guys, and then tackles, you draft them. You try and develop those guys. You don't want to leave that up to, you know, some random veteran who's been in the league a minute. But you do add guys that are veterans that have shown well, and that's what the Texans have done. And when you open your, sorry, I'm being really long winded right now, but it's just me. So there's no one to stop me. But you do that and then you look at yourself and you go, okay, well, now we got all these draft picks. We got all this cap space. We're not spending hardly any of the cap space on offensive line. We're not spending, we got, you know, Ursary because we needed to draft a tackle. We still have all this draft capital. What do we do? Oh, well, let's add two wide receivers that were just athletes of the year at their university. One that's built like Nico Collins and the other that shows high potential to be a good slot that could maybe step in and be a serviceable part of the equation for replacing Tank Dell's production while he fights his injury. And while we're at it, we'll get a nice third down back in Woody Marks, you know. Oh, but we're also going to sign Nick Chubb, who could also be the third down back. And then, you know, on top of that, here's what we'll do. We'll go out and just go down the list of things the Texans did to make wide receiver, running back. You know, they drafted a tight end. It was really late. I'd hardly count that towards it. But you use those assets at high levels to improve positions that were, I mean, wide receiver was a need for the Texans going to this draft. I'd say that in some way running back was. I viewed tight end as a deeper need than the way they addressed it. But I also think, just quick sidebar, that Nick Caley's scheme change could make a lot of people change their mind on Dalton Schultz, myself included. I am the poster child for someone who would owe Dalton Schultz a huge apology if Nick Caley does what I hope he can do. But you loaded up on offensive weapons, and so everyone who keeps shouting, like, well, what did they do with the offensive line? What did they do with the offensive line? They took a huge gamble. They bet on the odds that Cole Popovich is as good of a coach as Titus Howard has said, Jarrett Patterson, everyone in that room is like, yeah, we really liked Cole, but like he wasn't the guy, and he was kind of snuffed out by other coaching that wasn't listening to him. And you look around the league, guys really respect Cole Popovich, and you say, maybe if we give him some dogs, some guys that have something to prove, some guys that need to get out there and show that they are what they've been, and then you limit the amount you spend on the offensive line by just loading up on those kind of guys, then you open yourself up to spend those assets in the way the Texans did, to drastically improve at other positions of need. All the while, the offense has quietly become very good, to where, like I said at the beginning of the episode, the big question mark people are going to have is the offense in general. There are people that will say CJ took a step back. Peyton Manning combated that at the Fanatics Fest, saying that, you know, it took Peyton 6 years to make the playoffs. CJ's been in the playoffs every year he's been in the league. And CJ was held back. Every part of the offense was held back by the scheme. But you go down the line and you look at everything that was a problem, and you kind of start to go, well, you know, losing Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell is less bad when you add all the guys the Texans added, you know, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Noel, Christian Kirk, Justin Watson, Braxton Berrios. We're creating some competition for John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson at the bottom of the roster there at wide receiver. You go through and you add Nick Chubb. Joe Mixon is still here. Damian Pierce could still be here. It could be Dariah Gabuale, Woody Marks. There's some mixture of those guys that's going to be on the roster. And you kind of look and you go, oh, well, you know, Dalton Schultz could improve from the scheme. And then it becomes Dalton Schultz has shown at a high level. The only thing on this Texans team that has never shown at a high level that, I mean, still stands to benefit from the same thing is the offensive line. So then the biggest question mark becomes, will the Texans offensive line do enough this season to bring the Texans into contention? Because as much as you hate to see it, all these tier lists where it's like Super Bowl contender, you know, excellent team, playoff team, you know, one and done, and the Texans are constantly putting that one and done, you know, good team, playoff team, you know, that's generally where they're ranking the Texans. And that's because no one knows how this offensive line is going to pan out. Like, I have a pretty good idea based off OTAs what the Texans think is going to be the starting offensive line. You got, you know, Cam Robinson, Titus Howard, Laken Tomlinson, Jake Andrews, and Blake Fisher. But Ursary probably has some way of cracking into that, and I'd expect by the end of the season that he's starting in some way. I think he could take Cam Robinson's spot. But we have some idea, but we don't know what we're going to get from this offensive line. We don't know if the scheme changes enough to overcome. If the Texans took a risk here, it's a huge gamble, understanding that this is the last season that CJ cannot be extended. Like, there's no negotiating with him. Nothing is going to happen this offseason. He will play on his rookie contract this season. There is literally no way to negotiate an extension. It's not in that window yet. But next offseason starts the window where C.J. Stroud's contract becomes a huge topic of discussion. It becomes so incredibly important what the Texans are going to do with that. And so you really bet the house on can we do it? Because I'll tell you this, if it comes through, and coming through is not, oh, wow, this offensive line is excellent and C.J. Stroud is always on his feet. It is, wow, more times than not, or at least half the time, CJ has a pocket, and the times that it does break down, it's not really that bad. Or you could maybe even say that maybe CJ is seeing ghosts and is putting himself in more harm, and as he adjusts to this offensive line, he'll do better. But I would say a run-of-the-mill offensive line is a massive improvement over what the Texans had last year, and if we can see that, then that's the missing puzzle piece. I can confidently say, with as much as it is relying on potential, that there's not anything about the Texans wide receiver or running back room that leaves me to question anything. And all my questions about the tight end room center around Dalton Schultz's ability to step up, but Brevin Jordan's returning. Cade Stover's still in that room. Like, there's some guys that have shown, all of them have shown at some point in their career to be serviceable. I'm not super concerned, especially since we're probably not going to see the tight ends used to block, you know, George Karloftis off the edge several plays a game. Interesting decision there, Bobby. But that's the missing puzzle piece. And so, like I said at the beginning of the episode, it's going to sound redundant, because that's like really the biggest talking point for the Texans this offseason. is will the offensive line do it? Is putting Cole Popovich and Nick Kaley in charge of this Texans offense and offensive line going to be what affects the change that's needed to make this Texans team competitive? Because that offensive line is the difference between, oh, the Texans offense ranks 23 in the league this year, and the defense, a top five defense, keeps them in games. And, you know, here they are, 10-7 again. They'll go into the playoffs. It's the AFC South. They won the AFC South, you know, so they're in the playoffs again. And now, look, here comes a team we don't think they can beat because they didn't show up this season. I'm reading the script from 2024. I mean, the Chargers are not a team based on a good offensive line performance and a solid offense from the Texans that should be a worry in the world for the Texans. This Texans defense was going to stifle Justin Herbert, and the Texans offense, even at what it was last season, still took advantage of that. But it would have been a bloodbath if this Texans offensive line was where it needed to be, and the scheme was more conducive to what CJ and you know, this whole offense needed. So I'm a huge believer. I'd say right now, I think it's going to work. I have a lot of optimism around the offensive line working. And like I said, that's not like becoming top five offensive line. It's like run of the mill top 15 offensive line. And I'm not going into the top 10 with it. Just from coaching alone, then you can go in and into the draft and you can work on Nick Caserio's ability to draft guards and interior offensive linemen over time, because now you've cracked the code of, you know, what is needed. Because there's a point where you've added so much talent to the roster that in the draft you're like, okay, well, we don't really have like huge needs anywhere, but there's some nice to have. So then Caserio can take some swings on guys that, you know, show potential, but if they don't work out, they don't work out. Look at the 49ers. They had that huge run. I think they're kind of coming to the end of it, but there was a stretch of 4 years where they did not make but like maybe one or two good draft picks at all. And that's why they're at the end of their run. So I'm not hoping the Texans do that. But if Caserio has the opportunity to whiff on something like that, I hope he swings for the stars, because if he misses, there'll be next year. I hope that that's not the case. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm rambling now. Let's get into the comments. I'm interested in hearing about Nick Kaley helping McVay implement the gap scheme in LA and how that experience, if it exists, applies here. I will say that I'd more be interested, as much interesting that as that is, from what I heard, Cole Popovich, you know, was in charge of the run game last season, and when given the opportunity to kind of take the reins a little bit, push the gap scheme, the Texans' use of the gap scheme later in the season and into the playoffs increased drastically, and it drastically improved the Texans' run game. Past, you know, it was one of the only bright spots on the team, and it became particularly important that they could rely on it. So I think that combined with Cole Popovich and, you know, Nick Kaley understanding that he can rely on his team and that there's going to be communication between the staff to implement what's best for the team instead of I'm Bobby Slowick and I know what's best, so you will do what I say or don't do anything at all, which is what it kind of sounds like happened at the end of the season in Houston last year. I'm hopeful that there'll be, you know, positive change. And I hope they cover more about that. I mean, the most we're going to get, like that Jared Patterson interview with Mark Vandermeer and the Texans media guys, shed a lot of light on like his feelings about how the team was run and like who did what. But I don't know if we're ever going to get Nick Kaley just outright coming out and saying like, oh yeah, this is the scheme we run, and here, let me explain it in detail. Here, other NFL teams, are you taking notes? Because I'm going to go into really great detail. But I mean, I've been shocked by, you know, other things that the Texans have done recently, so maybe that's in the cards. About time to see a groundbreaking position battle between Graham Mertz and Keaton Slovis. That is the position battle that everyone is looking forward to. But low-key, I'd be looking out for that to see how they utilize those guys. Davis Mills was obviously taking first-team snaps with CJ down during OTAs, and he's very clearly QB2. But if it comes down to it, the Texans – and I've said it before, Caserio seems to view positional value like Davis Mills being one of the best backups in the league – as more valuable than whatever pick he can get for the player. But that doesn't mean that Davis Mills is entirely safe from being moved on from. if the right offer comes across. I'll tell you this, and maybe this is why I'm not the GM of the Texans, but if I was GM of the Texans and a pick of, you know, a second or even a third round pick came across the table for Davis Mills, I'd be like, okay, well, here's Davis Mills. We'll run it with, you know, some combination of Mertz and Slovis. And Davis Mills is as close as I get right now. And there's other, obviously other options like Ryan Tannehill, that are still on the market, not retired, and, you know, still very solid backup quarterback options. But at the end of the day, if CJ Stroud is not playing, there are very few situations in which I'm optimistic the Texans do anything this season. So the backup quarterback is an important position to some for that, like, feel good element of, like, you know, yeah, I want to feel like this team could still compete if CJ's down. But like, you know, I've said before, you know, there was a coach talking about Peyton Manning as they were asked, like, you know, why do you not give your second team quarterback more run, you know, so that he's more ready? And it's like, well, you know, if Peyton Manning doesn't play, we're screwed. We don't practice screwed. So I feel the same way about CJ Stroud at this point. And the quick sidebar, I saw someone for the first time in a while ranked Trevor Lawrence ahead of CJ Stroud on a QB 2025 power ranking list or whatever. And I'll tell you this, if you have Trevor Lawrence ahead of CJ Stroud on your power rankings, you don't know ball. That'll be a new segment. You don't know ball. I'm going to come up with something each week that means that you don't know ball. And it turns out thinking that Trevor Lawrence is a better quarterback than CJ Stroud in this day and age is a pretty clear and present indicator that you don't know ball. Let's see. And then CJ still only has one less playoff win than Lamar Jackson, and Lamar has had four top five defenses and a bunch of all pros. Yeah, I see your point there. I think there's a point where the offense has to step up, and that's why I appreciate what the Texans did with the skilled positions. I think defense wins championships, but like I don't look at like the Ravens with Trent Dilfer and go, yes, that's the formula. That is that you don't need anyone. So like having CJ is one piece, but I mean the offense as a whole has to perform in some way. It can't always be the defense, and we found that out. The Texans had a top five defense last year, and never saw the fruit of it. Like, you know, we're still to this day talking about how if this had happened, this Texans team would have done a lot better. And there's to the point where people are low on CJ Stroud, a lot lower than they should be. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. I had something come up just now, but I thank y'all for tuning in and helping me out with this solo show with all these questions. It was really good. Thank you. But I'm going to go ahead and hop off. Short episode, not a lot to talk about, middle of the off season. So I'll leave you with that. Thanks for tuning in. I'm James Roy. You can find me at James Roy NFL and wherever you get your social media. And this has been The Bullpen. If you are looking for a Texans podcast, you're perusing, you found your place, go ahead and subscribe so that you can stay up to date on the Texans with Tom and I. Tom will be back next week. Thanks for tuning in. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos, Texans.
Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.